everybody. This is Lauren Baker, founder of Search Engine Journal, and welcome to today's Search Engine Journal show. With me today, I have Jim Christian of digitalmarketers.org and DMO Advanced, and Stephanie Solheim of Mastermind Mansion. How's it going, Jim and Stephanie?
Hi. Hey,
how's it going, buddy?
It's going pretty well. I'm really digging your background there.
Thanks. I decided to change things up. It's really nice now.
It's really a nightclub.
Okay. It's not a nightclub. It's just a very efficient workspace for podcasting. And hey, it's great for your audience too. So I'm happy about it.
It really is. Jim coming in straight from the Regal Beagle. And Stephanie, where are you based out of?
I'm in Toledo, Ohio.
Awesome. Awesome. So today's episode is going to be about the value of smaller SEO events and masterminds. As we all know, for those of you that have attended events in the past, educational events and SEO or paid search, the industry used to have much larger events, and then things like pandemics happened, and suddenly there were events no more. But at the same time, over the years, there's always been smaller different events, smaller networking groups, marketing groups, stuff like that. And I know I've attended masterminds that have been in the world of digital marketing that are not SEO, and I've gotten a lot of value from the networking and just the ability to like sit down in a group of like 30 to 50 people or whatever it may be and get to know those individuals and get much more, again, value and quality of life coming from those types of events, a lot of which have been experiential and other similar type themes. So Stephanie, how about you go first? Tell the world a little bit about yourself and also Mastermind Mansion.
All right. Well, Mastermind Mansion started about 2 years ago. Our first event was in Vegas, and we wanted to get together and start something small to get all of our buddies together essentially after COVID. And we wanted to make sure that it was really small, that it was invite only, and that it was more of a flexible schedule where we weren't necessarily doing big PowerPoint presentations. It was more of a dialogue and a discussion. The first event in Vegas went really, really, really well. And since then, we've had one about every 6 months in another city. We kind of call it the real world of events. We all get together in a big, like we buy out a whole small hotel or a bed and breakfast or a big Airbnb. That's where the mansion part comes in. And we all stay there. So we're kind of just involved with each other all day, all night. And you have these really great organic conversations happening around how you're running your agency, how you're doing SEO, like tips and tricks that you wouldn't necessarily hear at a bigger event where there's so many people.
So if it's like the real world of SEO, do you vote people off throughout the event?
Is it we have.
actually, real world.
You don't vote people off in the real world.
Yeah.
You just record the drama for everybody else's benefit.
Unless you've stuck your finger in the peanut butter jar. and then there was, then Big Brother did that. It was real world.
Yeah, we don't vote people off.
No one gets voted out of the event. Okay, got you. Out of the mansion. How about you, Jim? Tell our viewers and listeners a little bit about the DMO.
Yeah, so as you've mentioned previously, we have rebranded a couple different times to get us out of the pigeonhole of Napa Valley. So we've been doing events for, I think, about 7 years now, and kind of keeping things small. For us, you know, we want to try to provide a really rich experience for our attendees, whether that's at our advanced show that's in Napa, or if it's through one of our masterminds, which are geared to be smaller shows, similar to Stephanie's Mastermind Mansion as well. So, you know, for us, I think there's just a level of care that comes with running these smaller events. It's easier for us to add really cool excursions like our last one that we did was here in Scottsdale, and we had a great time. We went to a rodeo, we did horseback riding, just did a lot of things that built or focused on community and coming together. So we really love these style events from our standpoint. And I don't think we're really going to go much bigger than our Napa show, which is roughly about 100 to 120.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back after this brief message from our sponsor. Stay with us. How is AI impacting content and SEO? How will ChatGPT affect your world? Get answers, insights, and stay up to date on the ever-evolving world of search. Subscribe today at searchenginejournal.com/subscribe. Now back to our show.
Awesome. Wow, that's actually pretty large. So, and I'm glad you finally did one in Scottsdale. I've been trying to tell you for years to do
this. I know. We listened. Yeah. Maui was better. I love Maui.
Okay, we're talking like Vegas, right? Vegas, Napa, Maui, all of these locations. So in addition to, and we'll talk about the value of learning at the same point, but do you feel that when you're holding these events that it's more marketable and appealing for people to go to these destinations? And then also, like, what are they getting from doing things that are not necessarily so? Back in the day, so to speak, when there was these larger events, you'd be sitting in a room of like 200 people, 100 something people, in a hotel with really bad carpet, with gray partitions on the walls, with this huge lighting and audio video thing, hardly any connection on your phone, everything else. What's the value of getting people together to do something fun and experiential?
I can jump in here because we just had a really, really awesome event at a really cool place called In Cahoots. We were in Austin about a month ago, and we had a three-story little hotel that we bought out that had a pool. It had like this rooftop bar, really cool. So when you're all together in one place that has all of these awesome things, like there's a Jew Boys Burgers down the street and you're just walking down there with your friends, the conversations don't stop. You don't have people who are just leaving the conference and just going back to their room to sit there. You're staying with all of the people that have been invited there, and you're really building those relationships that you wouldn't necessarily have the opportunity to build when you're at a larger event. You have access to the people that you really want to talk to. So in Austin, that might mean that I'm going to get burgers at midnight with a bunch of my buddies to talk about my buddy's new software. It's really awesome. You know, we cap our events at probably 40 people, and I don't think we have any desire to go above that because we don't want anyone to get lost in the crowd.
That's a good point. They're, you know, not everybody's a natural conversationalist. Right. No. And it can be overwhelming to walk in a room or to walk into like an after hours thing in New York or a larger event in Vegas. And there's hundreds of people in there, people that you don't know. You're trying to make conversation. You don't know if there's a salesperson. You don't know what's going on that front. And then also, like, I know, like, you know, when I've gone to trade shows or expos or educational events in the past, sometimes there will be a speaker and they're bringing up great material, but you are one of the hundreds of people in the room listening to that. And there's five or six tracks going on at one time. And then to go and try to have a conversation with that person that's been speaking afterwards gets to be almost impossible. Or they come in, they speak, they hand out some books or something, and then they're out the door, right? Yeah. So the value is only within that 15 minutes of a PowerPoint presentation that's probably been done 100 times before, and then the Q&A afterwards. So I've always found when I'm at these larger events, it's really the Q&A that I get more information from. And then I'm also, you have your hand up the whole time and you don't get called on and you don't have a chance to actually have that conversation about what's going on in your head, because you have stuff kind of spinning around that the wheels are turning while someone's presenting. So do you think those barriers are kind of taken down a little bit more?
I would say completely. Absolutely. I mean, you and I have been in this industry. Well, all of us have been in the industry for quite a long time. And, you know, I remember going to these larger shows and feeling not abandoned, but, you know, at the time I worked at GoDaddy and I just felt like everyone was kind of name badge hunting me. So it was like, who are you? Who are you? Who are you? Who are you? And you're like, whoa, dude, like I'm just here to enjoy the conference and hear and listen to the speakers. And now I'm just getting assaulted by all of these sales groups that are in there. And it was really frustrating. And then of course you have the wallflowers, the ones that you were mentioning that just really struggle with, you know, being out in an open area with hundreds or thousands of people. And it's really frustrating for them because they feel alone. They feel like they don't have a voice when they attend these things. And with these smaller groups, masterminds or advanced or whatever, I think you just get more attention to detail with your attendees. Like, I know who all of my attendees are by the time they show up at the event. I know what their preferences are. I know what they want to do. Actually Donna's on. Donna was completely scared to go into the Pacific Ocean and go snorkeling with us, but we broke that barrier down and we got her to go into the water. So congrats, Donna, on that. But it's these things, you know, we're all a part of a group and a family, really a huge family of marketers. And we all try to, you know, wind up at these events hoping that we're going to have, you know, a great experience. I think that there's a huge difference between us and some of these other larger ones that are out there.
And we say that everybody who comes to Mastermind Mansion is VIP. We don't have different levels of tickets. Everybody who comes is just as important as anybody else. And creating that culture has been really important to me to make everybody feel like they are meant to be in that room. Men, women, doesn't matter who. And that's kind of like where I'm going with this in the future with Sisters in SEO, is to branch out and create a mastermind mansion that is very, very accessible and very female friendly, because we definitely need those spaces in this industry.
Yep, agreed.
Interesting point. So having us also to a degree, a safe space, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Like, yeah. We've all heard stories from the events in the past and things like that. So, very cool. So if I'm going to attend, a trade show or educational event, or if I'm sending someone, to go to one, the two things that I basically want back in return are knowledge for myself, for that person to learn, and then some sort of an ROI, right? What's the business relationship made from there? Have they come back with a trusted, vetted vendor that we can utilize? Have they come back with someone that's a lead, that's interested in our services? Things along those lines, right? So would you say at a smaller event, getting to that point or getting to that goal is something that is more achievable than at a larger MIC event?
Absolutely. I mean, every time I go to my own event, I come away with at least two alternative ways to do my processes more efficiently. And I walk away with either somebody that can use my services or somebody that I can call on when I need help for something. And I know that happens across the board. I mean, you're making those really deep personal connections and understanding at a greater level what somebody else can help you with in your agency and your business and where you're trying to go. And like I said, with the smaller events, the presentations themselves, even if somebody is speaking on a topic that they've spoke at, before at another event, they're going to add to that. And we hear a lot of things that people aren't necessarily sharing anywhere else. It's only for us. There's a really big level of trust with the people that come to my events to know, like, that's not going to leave the room. It's not going to be sold or shared. It's going to stay within the group. So we get access to information that other people wouldn't necessarily have.
Yeah. And I find too, at our events, we find that people are more willing to share and share more deeply with a smaller event than something that's larger. And whether that's because, you know, Google might be in the audience, or it's just something that's so secretive, that's worked so well that they're not willing to share amongst a large audience. You get better information and more detailed information from these smaller events.
Jim, you used to have attendees sign NDAs, didn't you?
No, I don't think we had that. I don't think we ever did that. No.
I could be wrong.
It could have been.
We should.
We probably should. It would. Oh, you know what? Was it Ungagged? I don't know if Ungagged was doing that.
That was it. Yeah. And I was on stage once, and they actually took people out of the room for tweeting about what was being shared, which goes back to the whole safe space, right? Like, all, because because I know if I'm speaking, there's two things. One, I don't want to say something that's going to be tweeted and it'd be like, oh, that was against Google's guidelines. Oh, that's Black Hat. Oh, this agency does that. Oh, Lauren's agency does that. That's wrong. You shouldn't work with them. And then also at the same time, as a speaker, right, I've spoken to the large events and I've been very guilty of taking the same exact presentation from one and trying to change the logos on every slide and using it for another, to the point where I was presenting once, I think at PubCon, and I had like an SES logo on my slide or whatever. And I got called out by somebody in the room. It was kind of funny. But the thing that has always like stuck out to me is that when I am presenting to a smaller room of people, I hold myself more accountable as well, right? And then at SEJ, when we did our SEJ summits, where we met for the first time, by the way, Jim, we used to review the presentations with the presenters beforehand, give them feedback, work with them on editing, and make sure that there was not repetitive information given over and over and over and over and over again. You find that you're seeing the same thing at your shows. People are really bringing it. Do you review things with them beforehand? Are you making sure that the attendees are getting their money's worth from that respect?
You want to go?
Oh, I mean, I know that we are, because when you're up there talking about any kind of topic, any of our presenters, you're not safe from the audience. Like, everyone's just going to chime in and ask you something. They're going to derail your entire presentation and ask you and call you out. And you're not going to be able to say, no, I'm not going to answer that question. You're responsible to explain yourself. So if you're trying to gloss over a subject and somebody in the audience wants to hear more about that, you're going to have to change your presentation on the fly.
And then from our side, ours is actually structured a little bit differently. We try to go through the collaborative approach where there aren't necessarily attendees and speakers. We want everyone to participate with the group. And so we generally have like a relevant topic, like, hey, how can you improve your agency with AI tools? And what AI tools are you using today? Right. And that could be the topic. But the goal is to try to like pull that information from everyone instead of just one speaker. And so, you know, a lot of care and detail goes into, you know, we have limited seating. You know, for us, I think the last one was about 25 to 30 people. There's limited seating and limited availability. And so for us, like, we have to really care about who's coming to our events and how we can actually structure that so that everyone who's attending can give a little in one, you know, vertical or another, or perhaps in a different like technical SEO versus content versus AI. So we try to pull people from all different walks of life when it comes to digital marketing, and then put them together into a group that's really, really designed to accelerate growth and learning. So
both of you have used the words community, networking, groups over and over again as part of this. Does the party stop and does the knowledge sharing stop when the event's over? And how do you build community outside of that event? Are you doing anything like Facebook groups, forums, email lists, whatever it may be, so your attendees and speakers and all of the guests can still network and contribute and have conversations afterwards?
From our perspective,
I'm into Facebook groups. Huge into that, actually. Women in Marketing, I think, has almost 70,000 members now. But Mastermind Mansion has a VIP group where everybody stays in that group. And then we also have individual group chats for the attendees at all of the different cities. So right now we still have one from Austin that's pretty lively and going strong. And then other subgroups break out from there about different topics. I know we have one about AI right now. But there's a lot of activity that goes on within the groups and then all of these sub chats from there. But a lot of it is Facebook based.
Yeah, it's the same for us too. Facebook just has a better interface for having these types of groups available for people that are attending our conferences or our masterminds. So I think it's going to continue that way. The DMO community is in Facebook, and then we create separate groups for each one of the the masterminds that we do as well. So that's independent. So you get a little bit extra. You still have access to all the people that attended, and it's more of a private group. So if any questions come up, people can always use that group in order to get those answers.
Are you doing any things in terms like webinars or anything like that for your attendees afterwards as well?
We haven't done that. It's a good idea. I think for the most part, you know, it's dangerous, right? In some respects, because depending on the information that's given during a mastermind, you might wind up with stuff that you can't necessarily share. So then the webinar would kind of get dumbed down, or you'd worry about it getting out somewhere. So I don't know. Maybe it's a potentially good idea, but it could also backfire as well.
Yeah, and we say what happens at Mastermind Mansion stays at Mastermind Mansion. So if there's anything that's discussed at a particular like event, then we're not talking about that in the group with anybody who wasn't there at any other time.
Do you ever attend SEO podcasts to talk about your events afterwards?
This would be it.
Yeah.
Yeah. We
a joke. So.
Well, actually, yeah. This SEJ place is pretty nice.
Yeah, it is. It is.
I don't know. I've heard about you once or twice.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back after this brief message from our sponsor. Stay with us. How is AI impacting content and SEO? How will ChatGPT affect your world? Get answers, insights, and stay up to date on the ever-evolving world of search. Subscribe today at searchenginejournal.com/subscribe. Now back to our show.
Next question I had for you is like about like the whole like, so this was an industry, right? Even to the point where, you know, our largest competitor is basically an event funnel, a website and blog that funnels people into their events and things like that. And they've gone digital. I don't think they've had anything live, but that's how they started. They started as an event company that was bought and sold and everything else. Do you see these larger events coming back? Do you see the interest? I know like things like CES and lots of major, even tech events, auto events, things like that were closed down for years. Do you see things coming back? Where do you foresee all of this going in the world of where people can basically do anything while they're sitting on their couch now? People barely have meetings in person anymore. I see the appeal of the small event. It's fantastic. Do you think, what are some of the challenges and struggles that you think some of the larger events in our industry space are facing?
They're doomed.
Chiang Mai SEO just went on sale and they sold out their tickets in like 24 hours, I think, is what Matt said. I think they're an outlier. Like Chiang Mai, people have been waiting for years for that to come back, and there's probably always going to be an interest for that particular one. And also the location is amazing. Yeah. I don't necessarily know if like big hotel events in, you know, Vegas or San Diego or something like that would be appealing to me. I'd rather go to the smaller ones and really unique locations that have another like sell. Like, are there other things to do? Are there excursions? Are there, you know, what's the bonus instead of just sitting in a conference hall with thousands of people?
And to kind of add on that, I'll say this. She's right when it comes to the way that events are run. That usually isn't something that's, I guess, common knowledge between everyone in the community, is that, you know, in order to throw these events, the larger ones, you're going to have to pay for the hotel to get all the group rate rooms, right? And then if you don't fill those rooms, then guess what? You're on the hook for everyone that you haven't sold. Well, that could be thousands of dollars that you're out. Or you might have to have a food and beverage minimum of like $50,000. Well, okay, now I got to go plunk out $50,000, right? So there's a lot of overhead when it comes to these events that's really, really challenging. These larger events are set up that way in some respects. You know, there's one in particular that's in Seattle that hasn't come back. And, you know, they have to pay for a conference center. They have to pay for all the food and beverage there. They're going to have to figure out what the hotel rates are going to be, how they get those group rates. Is that part of the overhead that they have? You know, and it's not cheap. A couple $100,000 would probably be my guess as a minimum. And then you've got all the equipment and all of that stuff that you have to lock in. And so the real fear factor, I think, for these larger events and why they haven't really come back strong or at all is that they are fearful of risking everything for a show, because one or two bad shows will absolutely destroy them. And the real problem is right now is that COVID, while it's, I don't want to say over, it's less of a problem. There's still a lot of issues surrounding ticket sales, people purchasing in advance, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months out. So you're going to run into these problems as a promoter or as an event owner that, hey, I've had to put out a significant amount of cash and I still don't have enough ticket sales. And we're 2 months away from this thing launching. What do we do? You can't
people
necessarily
really do wait.
Yeah. You can't cancel it. Right. Cause then you're out all of that money. So you're going to have the show regardless. And then how much of a loss are you willing to incur and how many years can you actually, have that loss and not go under? That's really challenging. And quite honestly, again, you know, with some of these events, you're going to go there, you're going to get two drink tickets, you're going to get a crappy little bag that'll break in an afternoon. You're going to, you know, maybe see a couple speakers out at one of the extracurricular activity things. And so what are you really getting from that experience? And I think, you know, what Stephanie's offering and what we're offering is truly a nice branded experience. There are no drink tickets. So we go out and we have a great time and there isn't a limit. Or again, we can take you to a really cool excursion that you wouldn't be able to do if you had, you know, 2,000 people. So it's just a logistics thing. We can just do so much more by having a smaller group, and it just makes it, I think, a better experience overall. And of course, you know, toss in the different locations, Austin, Maui, Vegas, whatever. It's a really exciting experience. A lot of people haven't gone to some of these places, and you know, this gives them a really good excuse to write it off on their taxes.
Yeah, exactly.
But you don't have
get
to.
Better swag with us.
Yeah, better swag
like,
for sure.
Like the Link Juice mugs. Come on. I know we're both very proud of our swag that we give out. But really, like, our events are the all-inclusive hotel of digital marketing events. Like, we really want everything to be just handled. Like, come into the event and just relax. Like, you're going to enjoy it on more than just a business event level. It's truly like a vacation.
Like, just imagine picking up your attendees at the airport. How awesome is that?
Yeah.
So you're going to get that kind of service? No, you won't. And the really interesting thing too, I don't remember what your cost was, Stephanie, for the tickets, but you're paying the same price or maybe a little bit more, but it isn't much from these larger shows. I mean, so the benefit of the larger show is that you get to see more people and potentially interact with more people, but how many people can you really go up to and have a conversation with in a 2 day period? Maybe 100? Let's just say 100, right? Are you really losing that much by going to these masterminds? I don't think so. It's less people, yeah, but I think that you have a more interesting conversation with those folks, and I think that you have a better event at that point. So I don't really see the benefit of going to a big show anymore. Not to mention the big C. You're gonna get COVID immediately. There's always a problem.
Stop it.
Well, it could happen. I'll knock on wood.
Not only that, but there's a new competitive set out there, which is, there's new competition, which is everything that's popped up online, right?
Yeah.
So if someone is running an event or trade show or whatever it may be, and a lot of that information is already made available, it's already done with online events. It's kind of the same thing being done over and over and over again. Again, not only is someone getting the experiential the ability to travel, do cool stuff, go snorkeling, go get barbecue, actually make friends with other attendees, things like that. But it sounds like they're going to be introduced to content that they're not necessarily going to get by signing up for some free event or some other event online or whatever it may be. What about sponsored content? Either of you offer sponsored content at your events?
We have not.
We have.
We should. But we haven't.
So we've only done it once. That was in Scottsdale. We had Taboola as our first and only sponsor that we've had for a mastermind. It was a test case for them and for us as well. It's challenging to say, hey, fork over some money for us to, you know, do some amazing stuff. But just keep in mind that there's only, you know, 30 people. So the ROI for you, I hope is good, but like we can't guarantee it. And they were actually, they were awesome, great people. Couldn't be happier with that relationship that we had with Taboola. And I'm happy to promote them too. They've got a great crew, very knowledgeable, super open and happy to discuss everything, not salesy at all. So I think if you have the right relationship with someone and you kind of give them expectations of, hey, this is what to expect. And then just full on saying like, hey, like you could sponsor larger events. This is true, but you're definitely not going to get the connections and the relationships that you're going to get from these smaller ones.
One thing I liked about one of your Napa events that I attended, Jim, was that you brought in the mayor. It's kind of cool. But then also a winery owner. And in addition to being able to do a wine tasting, he went pretty deep into how the winery's grown, power of membership marketing, the ability to put together a monthly recurring revenue model based upon a seasonal product, the ability to pre-sell. So what I liked about that was we're all marketers, but at the end of the day, we're also small, medium-sized, large business owners at the same time. And there's value with learning from other business owners that aren't doing the same exact thing that you're doing as well. So in addition to the winery owner, which we learned a lot about that market that day, do you ever bring in non-search people to discuss business, to discuss partnerships, to discuss mergers or acquisitions, anything along those lines?
Yeah. I mean, we've had Charlie. So we had the mayor. She was awesome. We also had Charlie Palmer, who owns Charlie Palmer Steakhouses. I think he's got some restaurants in New York and Napa and some other places too. He was really great. He shared a lot of information. We try to have at least one person come into our events each year that is not a digital marketer for a couple different reasons. One, we want to pick their brain and see what they think digital marketing is, and we can learn from that. And then two, it's a really great exchange for us to give them information. Like the winery owner that you met with, Scott Harvey, and I've been a member for so long. but it's a mom and pop business. Outside of the cost of the land, there really isn't much to it. So for him, getting access to us is really, really great, for his business, because he can learn all of these cool little, tips and tricks that he can go back and talk to his wife, Jana, about. And then you also get us, who's like, okay, well, here's a small business. How are they surviving? What are they doing? And how can we layer that on top of it? And then also, how can we as marketers or agency owners create, you know, a package or a deal or whatever that might work for a customer like this? And so, I think it's a really, really good exchange for both parties.
How about you, Steph?
No, we haven't done that, but we do have discussions that are around business in that way. But everyone who comes is really like an agency owner in the digital marketing space. We've had some really great conversations with the bed and breakfast owners to try and help them out, but besides that, we don't have anybody specifically come in outside of the group necessarily.
And how long have you been doing Mastermind Mansion for again?
Oh gosh, it's been like 2 years, I think.
So what gave you the idea to get into it besides like lockdown and everything else? Were you attending masterminds like in other forms of marketing in the past or anything along
those lines? I was invited in to the group by Jordan Pierce, and they were talking with Terry and Elizabeth Samuels about doing spring training and getting that booted back up. And they were in discussions to just start something real small, just to get everybody together. And it was kind of unofficial, but people loved it so much that we just kept it going. And I really, really liked doing it. Like, some people are not event people. Like, it stresses them out. They don't love doing the hosting thing. Like, this is where I shine. Like, I absolutely love the community building and stuff like that. So I just wanted to keep it going, and I won't give up on it now. And I think that we could even do it more often, especially if we're doing like women's only events.
What about mentorship? Does mentorship come in at any, does mentorship play any role in the events that either of you do?
Yeah, it's a huge role. Being caretakers of the community, which is really basically what we are, there is a huge weight on our shoulders to make sure that the information and the events that, that our attendees attend are really well done, and to make sure that everyone feels like they have a home, that they can call on each other whenever they want, that we have these experiences that really lock us in. It's interesting. I talked to, who was it? I was talking to, I think the guy who owns Ungagged, about this in Vegas one time, but I was like, you know, people are here for an event. But you know, we rented out, I think the top floor of, or a penthouse inside of Vegas. And I was like, people are going to remember the event that they're here for, but they're not going to remember all of it. They might feel that like they got a speaker and maybe some little tips and tricks, but the real thing that they're going to remember is they're going to remember like being on this balcony up on the 60th floor of the Cosmo Hotel. And they're going to remember all of the people that were in this room, and they're going to remember those conversations. And those are the things that they're going to take back with them, and the things that really hold value. It's that social networking aspect. And so for us, the mentorship really never stops at the event. The event is actually just the beginning. And then after that, it's all about keeping those connections and bringing everyone into the community and just sharing to the larger audience.
How about you, Stephanie?
Yeah, in kind of an unofficial way, there's a lot of courses and classes and one-on-ones that I have done after meeting people at Mastermind. And I know other people have been the same way, where we just continue on learning from somebody else. Like, I'm going forward with Lee and Honey Witcher's program now, after Austin, and I am so super excited about getting into that. Some of the stuff I wouldn't have even known was out there or available to me if I wouldn't have met these people at the event.
Kaylee Larkin chimed in. She asks, what is something that you've learned from promoting or organizing events in general, besides not paying for blocks of rooms and bar charges that are per pour and not per time or whatever it may be, working with unions, et cetera. But what's something that you've learned from like overall promotion of these events? Because you have to sell tickets, right? You have to get sponsors. You have to bring in something. Like, what are some good lessons learned, and what's something you can share that you can apply to almost any kinds of marketing or events?
Kaylee always has the best questions. I love that girl. One of the things is that you have to be very noisy about selling tickets, almost to the degree where you're uncomfortable with how obnoxious you're being on the internet, just because people don't necessarily see it. And if they see it, they don't act on it. So when you go out to actually do the sales, you have to post all the time, like to the degree where you feel like people don't want to see you anymore. But it's because it falls so quickly out of the minds of people that they don't necessarily pull the trigger and buy. And it's like what Jim was saying, like you have to sell those rooms, and people are waiting way too long to actually pull the trigger, to where we're like worried that we're not going to have an event, even though you might have 50, 60 people saying, oh yeah, I'm there. Yeah, I'm going to be there. They just haven't bought their ticket yet.
Yep. And then, oh, early bird's gone. Oh man, it's too expensive. Yeah. Now I don't want to go. And it's like, well, I can't necessarily just keep the price what it is. Like, I don't think you understand.
I know.
Email, the early bird special has been extended 3 more days.
Dude, it's coming, man. I just don't think you're not going to get that email, because you are. Come to Napa. You, buy your tickets now.
How about you, Jimbo? What's something else that you've really learned from a promotion standpoint?
Well, clearly I can do audio and video equipment fairly well, so it's been great. You know, honestly, like the real benefit for me, it's weird. So I have a pretty extroverted personality, but it's interesting because when I'm not out and about, I have a very introverted personality. And so this being able to talk to a gigantic camera and having these lights and everything else in this area of my desk, it's way more comfortable. I don't mind being on video at all anymore. I know I look into the little hole and I imagine it's someone's eyeball. And then I just hope to God that I don't stumble over my words, and then everything else kind of goes okay.
I'm the exact opposite. Like, I'm totally fine in person. I'm worse behind a camera. Like, I'm completely different at my events. Like, I'm running around like a little fairy or something like that. And here I'm like, I can't look at this camera and pretend like it's a person. It's weird. Like, I need that eye contact. I need people in front of me.
You need to put like a little face up, right?
And then I think so.
Eyeballs. Have one of the eyeballs with the camera.
Yeah, I think I need to do that.
When Jim looks in the hole, he sees eyeballs. You just need the exact opposite.
I can just take my glasses off and I won't see anything.
Do you work at that desk? Do you work in that environment all day, Jim? Is that how you work?
This is it, brother. But I can turn the lights to a different color. I can make them white. I'm gonna make yellow. That's fine.
That's great. So we have something for extroverts, introverts, all kinds of different personalities and things that have been learned on that side. I wouldn't be doing 2023 justice if I didn't ask. With things like AI and all these conversations around ChatGPT and things moving so fast right now, if you're planning something that's like 3 months out, 6 months out, how do you make sure that material is still relevant and applicable when it's time for that to happen? And I don't mean
we don't even really nail down the speaker schedule until a week before. So it's not a problem for us because we just kind of let people discuss whatever they want. And we don't need anything really in advance. It's so casual, you know, and like Jim said, it's kind of like a roundtable discussion on certain topics. So we can always speak on what's relevant and topical, and there's not old information there because it just evolves.
Yeah, I remember. So like we said with ours, it's all collaborative and we have like loose topics that we'll go over, but we can change those at any second, like even the last minute before, you know, everything comes up. So I think that there's some fluidity with that. But you know, staying on top of things, I'm an agency owner, Stephanie's an agency owner. So like we're here in the group as both digital marketers and as event runners. So, you know, I think that there's some value to that. Obviously, there are some of the larger groups that are out there, larger events that do not have someone that's in the industry. And I think that that's kind of to their detriment. This is just a rinse and repeat process for them. They know what works. They know what gets ticket sales. They have a huge audience. They can spam them as much as they want. They get you in the door. You have a couple days of whatever, and then you go home and that's it. So it's a totally different experience. I think that we're able to be way more fluidic with our content and really securing the right people to join the events as well.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Not just to present, but to join. Right. Yep. Yeah. we're at the 45 minute mark almost already.
Wow.
Stephanie, where can folks find you online?
They can find us on our Facebook page at Mastermind Mansion or at mastermindmansion.com. You can get on our wait list. Something that's a little bit different with Mastermind Mansion is that we do not have open ticket sales. We have a wait list. And then every time we have an event, there are VIP codes that are provided to people individually. So we really curate our guest list to make sure that everyone is, you know, vetted, safe, high quality. We want the right people there. So get on our wait list and tell us why you want to join us.
So you're invite only?
Yes, we are. Yep, we never have any open ticket sales.
And then for us, we have Napa coming up in October. So that's our larger show. I think our cap this year is like 100 to 110 people. You can go to digitalmarketers.org and see event details there. I think it's October 24th through the 26th and always in Napa Valley. So, and we're open for ticket sales if you'd like.
Our next event will be in Colorado, but we don't have any more details than that yet.
So Jim, you're promoting the ticket sales.
Mm-hmm.
Stephanie, you're promoting the wait list, right?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. the wait list is invite only. You're sending out a number of invites at a time. Which method of promotion and sales do you think works better? Or are there pros and cons on that end?
There's definite pros and cons for sure.
I
might have a harder time selling tickets, but I also only have space for maybe 40 people.
And Jim, you're a big sneakerhead. So like you're used to the whole like wait list thing, right? And like the drop.
So we do both. So for Napa, since we have 100 people or so, it's open ticket sales. For the Masterminds, we were originally, for the first one, open to the general public, but we've now reeled that back and it is invite only for the Masterminds. And again, that's just for making sure that, you know, whoever's coming is an agency owner or not trying to sell someone or whatever the thing may be. It's for us to have quality control of, you know, who can or can't attend an event, or just to match them up better with other people that are attending the group. So I think, you know, if you come in towards the last, it's kind of like a crapshoot of, you know, who you're going to get. But I think that generally speaking, a waiting list is a better option for these smaller mastermind type events.
Super cool. Super cool. Well, it's been
one of the different things that we do. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to, this is something really cool because we do have the wait list, but the first night of our event, we always have an open house where anybody is welcome to go. And we promote that in SEO Signals Lab. So it's totally free to attend. Anybody that sees the invite can show up. And I always buy pizza for everyone.
Nice. Well, it's been great having both of you on the show. Just to let you know, I dropped the links to both of your events within our live notes as we're broadcasting on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, and Twitter. And then in our show notes, we're going to drop the audio for this next week. And if you're listening to this right now, it's a week later. So, and we'll also have the show notes with all information on SEJ about both the DMO and the Mastermind Mansion. Jim and Stephanie, it's been a pleasure talking to both of you today.
Thanks, buddy. I love you.
Thanks. Okay. And thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.